Thank you for listening to KHSU Thursday Night Talk is coming right up. This week, Lorna Bryan is our host. As always, we welcome your contributions. Give us a call at 826-4805 if you're out of the area at 1-800-640-5911. And we are accepting text messages at 492-KHSU. Now, over to Lorna.
Good evening. Abby Kelly Foster, Ida B. Wells, Gloria Steinem, Margaret Higgins Sanger, Angela Davis, Janet Mock, Linda Sansour, Carmen Perez, Sabrina Fulton, Lucia McBath, Alicia Garza, Jill Larrabee, Sierra Leash. These are all women who have led the charge of resistance or female activists. The last two names are here in the studio with me tonight. Jill Larrabee is an organizer with Show Up Humboldt. It's a place for people to come together, get informed on issues, and be empowered to take an action, participate, and everyone's voice is heard. Sierra Leash is a global refugee activist and advocate, and she offers direct refugee support through HumanWire. Sierra is a longtime Humboldt County resident who got involved with the global refugee crisis in December 2015. After two volunteer trips to Greece last spring, Sierra has continued to stay engaged in the crisis by supporting independent volunteers, small grassroots NGOs, and refugees directly in Greece, Jordan, Turkey, and Syria. Recently, she teamed up with the organization HumanWire to sponsor refugees in Turkey, and she looks forward to engaging the community for their support. Sierra and Jill, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I added you to a long list of activists, and it seems that one thing is consistent. We are fighters. We find a cause and we go all out for that cause. So I want you to start by telling me about your activism and what drove you, what inspired you to become an activist, starting from the beginning, if you want, and then your current work. So let's start with you, Jill.
Okay, well, I guess I started when I was born, you know.
Good place.
I can't hear myself.
Take one.
Oh.
No.
Sorry, this is my first time on radio. I'm a very passionate person and very empathetic, and I was raised by people that were very passionate themselves about civil rights, and I was taught early about Eldridge Cleaver, you know, Angela Davis, everybody, and I've been very passionate my whole life and probably been told to shut up more than once. At some point in your life, you end up just working and knowing you should be doing something better and more important. And you keep talking to your friends, and at some point you just need to shut up and do it. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. Well, what are you currently doing?
Well, Show Up Humboldt is a place to give people their voice so they can feel connected and not so lost, and direct them, especially since a lot of people in this area haven't challenged their white privilege, and they haven't challenged themselves to even understand what that means, and there to help them, show them a little bit, and also guide them towards ways of action, even just small, everyday human action and interaction and treating people humanely, and places they can get informed with, and trying to link them up with the other organizations in the community. Like Surge Humboldt is a great place for showing up for racial justice, and then True North and the NAACP. So just give people a place where they can get together.
Absolutely. And for you, Sierra?
Also, probably when I was born, I was destined to become an activist. My father, when I was younger in the 80s, he was really involved with Earth First and Wolf Action groups and maybe a couple tree sits up in Montana. So I was kind of raised with that activism around and knew it existed, but it didn't. That cause didn't speak to me necessarily. So for me, activism kind of came through service and the desire to serve and to be of service. And for me, I've been involved with a few things. Now my activism is mostly focused on refugees and the global refugee crisis, which is the largest humanitarian crisis of our lifetime, if you haven't heard. And I was really moved by what was going on in the winter of 2015 with the refugees arriving in Greece. And I was just very moved to do something. And for me, the doing something was going to Greece and volunteering. I went in January of last year and I helped distribute baby carriers and put refugee babies into baby carriers, which was amazing. And then in March, the situation totally changed for the refugees and they stopped being able to move through Europe so freely. So I went back again in March, and that trip mostly consisted of just handing out aid and kind of working with refugees as they were in a state of limbo. And when I came home, I wanted to stay involved, but I wanted to get to the next step. What's more for refugee support than just taking trips and spending money myself, traveling back and forth with my privilege to hand out stuff? And that just didn't really sit super well with me. So I continued to seek out opportunities. I wanted to like connect directly with refugees really badly. I felt like I just wanted that connection. So I found first this group called the Refugee Buddy Network on Facebook, which is very much like what it sounds. And I connected with a man in Jordan and have been helping him for the past year. And through that, I met some other families in Greece and started helping them. And informally, I rallied my community to help me sponsor these families who are fleeing war and now stuck in a state of limbo. And I think I really found my voice, and all of a sudden I became an activist now. And I think it's important if you find a cause and it speaks to you and you just kind of jump in. And it spoke to my heart, and I really would like to be a catalyst for other people to get involved. And I like to keep this topic current in our local community because we're really far removed from the crisis, and we're not in Europe, and we're not really receiving refugees in this community. So it's important for us to keep it on our minds and in our hearts. And that's kind of where I've landed with my activism.
So both of you have done some pretty drastic things in terms of your activism. Sierra, in your case, you dropped everything and you left the country to help. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
What was the turning point that made you do that?
I've left the country and volunteered before, so that was not something totally out of the realm of my reality. But for this crisis specifically, I would recommend anybody checking this out online. There was a lot of events that happened last year with the refugee crisis. A lot of people were really moved by the image of Aylan Kurdi washing up on the shores in Lesbos, and it was still traumatizing and moving. I don't have children, so it didn't hit me in the same way. I saw a video in late November that someone posted. It's titled People of Nowhere, and you can still find it on YouTube, and it will make you cry. And it just showed people bringing people on from the boats onto the islands. And the image that struck me so deeply was people helping this like 90-year-old grandma up the rocks of Lesbos. And you just have to think of this journey that this woman went through to probably walk out of Syria, to walk into Turkey, to pay these smugglers to get on these boats, and to go all the way to Greece and make it there. And I really just felt like I had to participate and get involved. That was it for me. People of Nowhere.
And for you, Jill, you did something on January 20th. What did you do?
Well, I was in Washington, D.C., and I had been growing my hair for probably 5 years or so. I was down to below my, all the way down to my butt. And instead of protesting, which I planned to do, I had a bed-in with one of my best friends, Ella, John, and Yoko. And we did the hippie thing, and we burned sage that we got from the desert, brought it from Humboldt to D.C., and I shaved my head and donated my hair to Wigs for Kids.
Wow.
Wow.
Just to get rid of that trash that was building up.
Wow.
Wow. And had you planned to go to Washington, D.C. before November 8th?
I knew it was coming. I knew what was happening because I was living in rural Virginia, and before I lived in Humboldt and I moved away, and I was living in rural Virginia and I knew what was happening. I knew what the country, I'm fortunate, I'm privileged, I get to move around, and I do that by choice to meet people and have experiences and learn about human beings, and that was a real opener. Eye-opener, and so I wanted to get back to Humboldt before the election, just because it was getting a little more intense. Mm. But yeah, I knew, I didn't really, not to be offensive to anyone, I didn't really care to go celebrate Hillary winning, if she were, but once the results came, I'm going to protest. And then by chance, the Women's March just evolved into this thing, and that was it was magic.
So let's talk about that for a minute. November 8th, the eve of my birthday, might I add. November 8th was a pivotal moment in the United States, not just because of the election results, but it activated this country into activism. Specifically, I won't say specifically, but a lot of women, yeah, I can say specifically women took the charge to maybe activate their activism for the first time or reactivate. I think I saw signs from the Women's March in D.C. from elderly women saying, it's 2017 and I'm still at this stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't believe it. So in that case, yeah, it has activated, or it has propelled people into a movement.
Yes.
Let's talk about that a little.
I think that I have always been on that cusp of going after it, and there's two things. One was the idea of addiction to a paycheck and having to work and not really following your heart and following your path. And I have, you know, with minimum wage jobs, you know, you keep doing that over and over and over again. And then the other thing is, I was fortunate enough to live in Los Angeles, and during the Oscar Grant's murder in San Francisco, it wasn't fortunate, that part, but there was that was when things started to activate and people started to get on protest and say, this is not right, police brutality, you know, what are we going to do about this? And I tried to participate with First Earth First, and I was in a lot of groups that were anarchist and very elite, and it was very much machismo, misogyny, elite, like, no matter how much Noam Chomsky you read, you're still not going to be smarter than these guys. So it was very disheartening, and I didn't have a place, and I still just kept going at it by being on the ground and just, you know, shoving it down friends' throats, even if they don't want to hear it. I don't care. You're going to hear it.
Right.
But throughout the last few years, keep doing that. And I was in Mexico when Ferguson happened, and it was mind-boggling what was going on. And yeah, once the election happened, it was just, it's on, it's game on, we've got to do this. And the women that organized that were so empowering, because they were like, I didn't know how to do this. And with the invention of the internet, you know, and like in Twitter, we just have such a voice, and we are not alone anymore. So
I think it's the same with the refugee crisis too. The group that I originally went with, Carry the Future, was founded by a mom because she was moved by what she saw happening, and she just said, I need to do something. She thought she was going to collect 100 baby carriers. She collected like 3,000 right away. Now they've collected thousands and thousands and distributed them. So yeah, the like more often than not, I saw women doing the work and creating groups and starting solidarity groups and things. And of course, there's men that are great and there's wonderful, and I have great support in my life about what I'm doing. But there is something that speaks to women about the service and the nurturing and empathy and doing and the doing. We're doers.
Right, the action, yeah. Not the talking. Yeah.
Because it speaks louder than words.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember my mom was a quiet person, but there was always something that would be a catalyst for her, and it would activate her. Mm-hmm. And I see that so much more in women than I do in men. Mm-hmm. Something will just get to us, and it will eat at our hearts and our souls and our beings. And I think the key is listening to that, mm-hmm. and acting upon it. And you both are a prime example of that. Now, what... One thing that you said, Sierra, you know, a woman, she figured she would get 100 baby carriers. She got thousands. What happens when you start this movement and you realize it's bigger than you expected? Have you encountered that with your own activism? And what about you, Jill?
Yes, a little bit. I've very much been kind of independent on my own. I was aligned with a couple groups. I have seen, especially in this past year, there's been this like lack of support from all these large organizations. So there's all these small NGOs that have all of a sudden popped up by all these people that have no idea how to run an organization, how to create a nonprofit, how to manage it, how to deal with funding that you're getting. So you have to learn how to play well with others, which is it's a lesson. It's a challenge, too, sometimes. And being open to other people's opinions and input and what they might want to do might not be what you want to do. And I think finding what you align with and being strong with, like, where your values are and what you want, what your focus is going to be, is really important. And that's kind of why I've gone off on my own and become very independent, because I chose to seek out really diverse opportunities. I'd like to be able to pick a project and try to rally the community to support it, like this garden project that my friends are building right now in Greece. I was able to contact farms here to help fund the project, so we're like making this bridge and this connection. And if I was only tied to one organization, I might not be able to do that. So I think just integration and working with people is a big lesson for activism.
Truly. And what about you, Jill?
Yes, exactly. Also, having reverence for the wise and the ones that have been doing this for 30, 40 years, but also having the wisdom and knowledge to know that we can stumble and fall and go for it, because, you know, people may have been doing this for 30, 40 years, but things are changing, and that might not have worked. And we have to just be bold in what we're doing and play well with others. And,
yeah. You know, there were a lot of discussions post-election about the protest and how they were nonviolent protests, but mm-hmm. protests that shut down freeways and stopped traffic and stopped transportation, especially in large cities. Mm-hmm. And it's inconvenient, it's unnerving, but it is an action. It works.
Right.
And you might not have done that 40 years ago. That's what's happening now. So, yeah, it is something that has to be morphed and developed and changed over time. And with this current cycle that we're in, we're using social media, we're using the radio, and it is a growing movement. It's like that snowball rolling down the hill, and it's getting bigger and bigger.
Like you said, inconvenient. People need to be inconvenienced. White America needs to be inconvenienced. And it's okay. They, you know, feel uncomfortable, breathe it out, and then look at it from other perspectives.
As an African-American woman, I'm glad you said that, not me.
I'm here for you.
Well, we're going to get back to that in just a minute. I just wanted to remind you that you are listening to Thursday Night Talk. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant. I am in the studio with Jill Larrabee. She's an organizer with Show Up Humboldt, and Sierra Leash. She is a global refugee activist and advocate. And tonight's theme is Women Leading the Charge in Resistance, Female Activists. If you want to join in the conversation, please give us a call, 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. You can also text your question if you're a little shy and you don't want your voice heard on the air. You can call 492-KHSU, and that's 4924. I'm looking at my phone. 5478. So, Jill, you said, what did you say about white people a minute ago?
They need to feel uncomfortable. We, you know, it's something that, when you get defensive and you feel angry or fearful about something, they just need to let that go for a minute and think about the other side. And it's a difficult conversation to have with people, but if you can have it in an engaging and honest way, I think that a lot of times you can make progress and have people have empathy. And one of the things that's a little more difficult on some of the more reactionary and reactive people that are especially trained Fox News wise, or they're trained in watching media. Even CNN, and if you're a person that watches TV, you tend to be more reactive than someone that doesn't and gets their media other ways. Mm-hmm. And so that's a line that I guess I didn't realize how divisive it can be, but being an ally is one of the most important things. I've lived my life that way, and being able to talk about it freely is very important.
So, as an African American woman who's really active in social media, I read and watch the news a lot, and one thing that I noticed is there was a bit of division with the Women's March racially.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still formulating my view, my opinion, my thought about that. But there was quite a division amongst African American women and white women. I've heard scholars say, you know, black women already got it during the election.
She's responding to the look on my face.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. Now, this is what I watched during a news story. It was a professor from Rutgers University, and they said African-American women were already on the move. We were fighting against the president before he became president, mm-hmm. and it took November 8th for white women to jump on board.
Right.
So has the expression changed a little bit now?
Yeah.
So
in the context.
So there has been a conflict. I have several African-American friends in larger cities who did not participate in the Women's March in their cities. I, in fact, did not participate for my own separate reasons. Mm-hmm. I went somewhere else for another engagement. But people expected me to participate.
I didn't participate. Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you participate, if you'd like to share?
Personally, it didn't speak to me. I am a fan of focused action, I guess, and I didn't quite get the focus, and I just didn't. I don't want to put it down. I love everybody that went out and marched, and I am like thrilled that all of a sudden now people are wanting to be active, because I've been screaming about the refugee crisis for a year now, and I'm thrilled that like I did a previous interview, and I really just like I feel really strongly that pick a cause, find something that speaks to you and get involved. And if it's refugees, yay, come get involved with me. But if it's not, pick a different one, because there's a billion causes. So it, to me, it just felt really broad. And I honestly, I was worried about the protests in D.C. I was very worried for people's safety. I'm really thrilled that it was nonviolent. I thought all bets would be off after the election. Hmm. So that's why I was concerned for my friend's safety that went to D.C. originally. And then it just didn't really speak to me. So I didn't participate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jill, you were there.
I was on the ground and I was pretty close to the stage and I got to see the speakers and that was incredible. And the organizers themselves tried to be as intersectional as possible, and they did a great job of, you know, having a lot of speakers. One of the most heartbreaking things that I saw during it was Janelle Monáe. She brought up Trayvon Martin's mother, everybody's mother who passed, and having a say her name chant, and women. White women in front of me like, it's time to march, it's time to march. And that is the thing where intersectionally, like, people
miss the point.
They miss the point. And the problem with feminism and white feminism, there's two things, is that the privilege and then oppression of being a woman and not being able to come to terms with your privilege, and not being able to say, and not being able to just say, yeah, I'm a woman, so I do get this type of oppression, but, and I still make 77 cents to that dollar versus 50 something cents to that dollar, you know.
Right.
And owning your privilege and being a woman is a very important thing as a white woman. And it upset me to hear a lot of white women were talking about around me at that point. And I just tried to hold a better space, a more positive space, and let the other actions happening. And it's just more not even being present in their own bodies. They're just talking and talking and talking and not really being present for the action and knowing about other people's beliefs.
You know, when I began the show, I began by listing women's names. Activist, and these names were participants in the Women's March: Angela Davis, Janet Moss, Linda Sarsour, Carmen Perez, Sabrina Fulton, that's Trayvon Martin's mother, and Lucia Macbeth, that's Jonathan Davis's mother. Those women, I'm sure, did not plan on becoming activists.
No.
Not their choice.
No. I mean, I have chills just thinking about that. They became activists because their children were murdered at the hands of police officers. And during the march, they weren't given the respect during the Women's March.
Yeah.
That's tragic.
That's painful.
And it's just a little blip on the bigger picture of what or why people like myself need to be out there. I need to make that white woman feel uncomfortable. And I did. I stirred the turd. I made some women feel really uncomfortable. And they were talking. We were stuck against a police car. That was really funny. We were trapped against a police car with a million women and men, a few men. But the car was running the whole time. And it was so hot. Well, it was cold, but it was so hot. We were sweating. And then we had a little pathway, so everyone was just, you know, just brushing up against you. And some people were really trying to, you know, I want to march now. And they wanted what they wanted. And I said, there's a million people here. We're an entity, you know.
Right.
And then I said, I came 3,000 miles. Get out of my way. Like, just stop. Just relax and enjoy yourself.
Sometimes we have to remember it's not about you.
Yes. That's
it's not about you. It's not about the movement, whatever that movement may be. So,
well, and that's important too, if you think about it too, because if you're going into activism or collective action or involvement with anything and you're doing it for yourself, you might have to check why you're doing it.
Right. And that was the whole thing about ego and elitism when it came to being in the anarchist movements. I was like, oh, I have no place here because I've dropped that ego
Yeah.
I know a few people in politics lately who have that same kind of concept. A little narcissistic.
Yeah.
The bully
just
mentality.
Just a little, though.
It's because they're a dying breed. They're dying. It's happening. Mm. He's just having the last final tantrum, and he's just going to...
Let's hope so. If you're just tuning in, this is KHSU Thursday Night Talk. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant. I'm joined with Jill Larrabee. She's an organizer with Show Up Humboldt, and Sierra Leash. She's a global refugee activist and advocate. And the theme of tonight's show is Leading the Charge of Resistance. Female activists. If you'd like to join in the conversation, please give us a call, 826-4805. You can call toll-free if you're outside of the area, 800-640-5911. And I've written it down this time. If you don't want to have your voice on the air, you can text us by calling 707-492-KHSU. That's 492-5478. So this whole activist thing, I'm using that in air quotes, of course, it can take a lot out of you, I'm sure. I mean, you, Jill, you had a regular gig before January 20th. And I'm focusing on that because that was kind of a life changer for you. Mm-hmm. What did you do, and how did you take that path to just change your life trajectory totally?
Well, if you talk to my family, I've been kind of changing my life trajectory a lot, learning skills and seeing the world and meeting people and communicating. And I think that I just let go the idea of, like, I don't need a career to be anything. I'm here. This is the only chance. I lost a friend a few years ago, and it made a big impression of just saying, I don't care about a career. This is more important. And I started exploring lots of different philosophies, and I was raised kind of without religion, and I think that that's a really great thing in structured, organized religion when you think about all the nastiness it is. But within also the religion itself, it gives you community, and when you don't have a community, that's, you kind of get lost. So it's finding, like, activist community, people, like-minded people, and getting out there. I think I went on a tangent.
No, it's fine. But no, but it was a beautiful path. So after January 11th, did you quit January 20th, excuse me, did you quit a traditional job?
Like, I was cooking actually around October, that's when I did it.
Because I knew what was happening. You and Michael Moore.
I was listening to some podcasts afterwards, and there was a woman, an African-American woman, who called her mother, and she was like, oh, we've been doing this forever, don't worry. You knew this was going to happen. Like, the older generations of people were like, oh, this is going to happen. But, I was working in Virginia and cooking at a kitchen manager, a baker, and said, no, no more. I really love the food to table, farm to table, local movements, and I try to, when I do work a real job, you know.
A 9-to-5.
Yeah, I would try to do it in a sustainable way. When I was younger, I did do the, I'm going to work in graphic design and work in an office building, and the waste and the attitudes and the fluorescent lights that were just aging people. You know, I was like, I'm here to live, and I'm going to be poor doing it.
Okay. So you just threw away your spatula and mm-hmm. you picked up your sign, it sounds
yeah.
like. Wow.
Yeah. And soapbox.
And now, without being too personal in mm-hmm. your life, did you have a family that said, okay, you have to come on board and trek across country with
I've
me.
I've got a dog. She goes where I go. Yeah, I'm pretty...
No
I'm
convincing pretty up, for
right,
the dog.
Right. I'm upwardly mobile wherever I want to go. I can do it. That's... Yeah, I've kind of lived my life that way.
Okay. And Sierra, did you uproot your life or change your trajectory for after December 2015?
Yeah, a little bit. I had some interesting circumstances happen around that time, and I was just very much like, something is shifting. Like, I need something else that's like outside of myself to be involved with. So, of course, I was like listening to the news. Oh, the Greek economy collapsed. Oh, great. Okay. Oh, and then the next thing is like, oh, wait, Greek refugees coming into Greece. I was like, how is this functioning? So I just kept watching the news and listening and just was like more and more and more moved and had this like idea that I brought up with my partner. I was like, what do you think if I go to Greece and volunteer? And he was like, yeah, go ahead, go. So I got it together. I did a lot of research and I decided to go. And then once I was there, the first trip that I went on was focused on women and kids and babies. And I don't have any kids of myself, but I have always loved babies and I love baby carriers. I've worn a lot of my friends' kids, and so it was like a perfect fit for me.
Wait, yeah. Hold on, did you say I've worn my babies?
The whole point was the baby carrier,
right?
Like baby Bjorns and Ergos and stuff.
I got you.
It's all about baby wearing and carriers and stuff. So my friends on my team would laugh at me because I was like the refugee manhandler. Like, I would come after these refugees with the carriers and be like, no, you need it. You have to convince them, and without using English because they don't speak English, to convince them that it's free. Fit the baby in the carrier and send them on their way. So we did that for 10 days, and it was very intense. And just with the way that the world is right now and the crisis and my age and everything, and I've always felt like, oh, I'm going to have kids, and I haven't yet. And then I just had this, like, revelation when I was there in Greece dealing with all these beautiful families that have these amazing children that they want to love and they want to care for, and they like went on this crazy journey to give them a better life. And then I'm like, why do I need to bring another, like, I was on the fence too, do I need to bring another person into this world, like, for what? So for me, it was very much like, oh, these are the kids that I'm supposed to be serving. Yes. Like, oh, this is how this is supposed to play out with me and kids. And so for me, it was just this like connection to go, and then this focus with the kids and to come back. And now I'm just like so far down the rabbit hole, I just can't stop. I picked up another family in Turkey to support, and there's like this single male refugee to support. So I just got super involved and just dove in. And so for me, when I came back, it's like, what changed for me was just my, like, everything. Just the oh, do I need to go to that show again to see the person that I've seen 7 times? Or do I need to get my nails done? Or do just, like, the little things that you can do to change your life. And then for me to, like, raise my voice within this community to either inspire people to go volunteer in Greece and help them find places to go volunteer. I've helped do that with a few people. Or to try to get financial support for projects that I know are happening. Or try to get financial support for the families I'm trying to support. Just, like, little things. We did this panel discussion last weekend, and one woman really spoke to me, and she said about, like, measuring success and, like, tempering success and not, maybe success is small. Maybe it is just helping one family and that's enough, but maybe it's this huge broad thing where you can, like, get the whole community involved, and maybe that's where your forte is. So I think just measuring success and being, like, accepting that within yourself, and that's part of my story too, also tangenty.
So you don't have to have a biological child. You can nurture a whole country.
Yeah, or like these families that I know, like, I can't, now most of them I haven't even met in person. I can't wait to go meet them. And it's like, they had a baby in October, and I got to, like, help them with their baby that they want to love and support. And so I'm okay with that. Like, these kids have their whole lives ahead of them. I haven't created any children yet. So it's like, if I can support them helping their children, like, I think that is contributing to the world.
It's preparing you for that next step. Right. Yes. If you can nurture thousands of people, one should be a piece of cake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, recently Rihanna was honored by Harvard University. She received a humanitarian award.
Really?
Yes. And it was very humbling to her. And she said, let's see if I can find this quote. My grandmother always used to say, if you got a dollar, there's plenty to share. Mm-hmm. And she was so humbled receiving this award, and she said, you know, fame and wealth has nothing to do with being a humanitarian. It's just about having a heart and caring and basically listening to that voice. Yeah. Clearly you two have done that. So do you listen to that voice when you may need to slow down? You know, you take care of others. What about taking care of yourself?
I'm just learning.
I'm awful at it.
Right. I'm learning how to do it with quitting a quote unquote real job and doing this. I'm much more conscious of my actions and my words and where I am. And I love the hot tubs. Go to the hot tubs. I try to make sure to give myself that time. But it's easier when you're saying, this is all I'm doing. I'm focusing on this, and then I can give myself a break. But when you're working 50, 60 hours a week in a kitchen and trying to do this and be on listening to all the news and getting, you can't do it and you lose your mind. Yeah. Really.
Yes.
Yeah. Balance is key and incredibly difficult to find sometimes. Right. And like with me too, it's the need is so high. And to hear, like just yesterday I was communicating with one of my friends, and it's like hard to know this need and not feel like I need to do something about it. So I have a really hard time finding balance. I'm trying to be more cautious with what I take on and be okay with myself for not taking on everything, which is hard because I want to participate. I want to help. So
that's kind of what we're doing. That's one of the reasons why a lot Show Up Humboldt and a couple of the other groups were trying to get together, the organizers, and you know, divide and conquer, spread the mm-hmm. wealth a little bit about what actions are happening in the area and what we can go to, the town hall meetings, mm-hmm. You know, whatever other organizations are having meetings, and maybe can have a better network. And it would be nice if it wasn't on Facebook. But
it is a tool that can be used for the good at times. It can break up relationships, but it can also bring people together for the greater good of mankind. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a collective calendar that is being formulated.
Yes.
There are a lot of organizations right here in this community even that are doing the same work,
mm-hmm.
and they may not realize that there are other groups just across town or across the street from them
right.
doing the same work. With collaborative works, you have power in numbers. So tell me about that calendar that you can link people together.
We're having the meeting in 2 weeks, so after that, we'll tell you all about it.
Okay. Can others participate, or can I invite you back even?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And any other organizers would definitely be welcome to come, you know, and I can get that information to everybody. Right now, the North Coast People's Alliance, their website has a good calendar.
Okay.
And then nationally, Michael Moore did a resistance calendar where you could put everything on there. And
really?
It's disheartening sometimes because we're so, you know, oh, it's happening in San Francisco.
Right.
How are you going to get there? So we're kind of isolated here. So it is nice to try to also, there's a couple projects. There's a couple places in Oregon, in Southern Oregon, like that are doing a lot too. So we could try to link up with them. And that's kind of where my focus is trying to get as much experience, as many connections as possible and create some kind of action. And hopefully with that, we can have a parade. That's what I want.
Okay.
I want us to have a parade and a party and make money for the organizations around here.
Awesome.
So that would be beautiful.
Any musicians up there?
So we are coming to the end of the show in a little bit. So at the end, if you can prepare, if you'd like to share any information, if people mm-hmm. want to contact you for the organizations you're a part of. But and I'm going to go back to the self-care thing for a minute. Sierra, as you know, I was the moderator mm-hmm. of that event that happened last weekend. It was United States of America.
Of women.
Of women, excuse me.
simple, in America.
Yes, yeah. Yes. United State of Women, and it was a panel of women activists from right here in this community. And I shared something that I have to remind myself, for myself, I shared with the with the panel and the audience that we must remember for self-care. Mm-hmm. It's simple. Mm-hmm. It's the analogy of a plane in distress. Mm-hmm. When you're on a plane, the steward, they will tell you when they're giving the safety message, in the event that you need oxygen, the oxygen mask will drop. And if you're with someone who may be weaker than yourself, it's your duty to put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Right.
Because if you're out of oxygen, right, you're going to pass out, and you're not going to be of any help to that weaker person. Right. So yeah, remember the analogy of the oxygen mask. You can't take care of Syrian refugees, yeah, if you can't take care of yourself. You can't organize if you're not around to take care of yourself.
Right.
So
yeah,
put on that oxygen mask.
Exactly.
This has been a public service announcement from Lorna Bryant. No, but it is very important.
It's true, and it's counterintuitive to what we're taught as women. Mm-hmm. We're taught to give. And don't think, I don't know if it's a New England thing, but I grew up in New England, and you give. You think of yourself, it's selfish.
Mm-hmm.
So I love self-care. I'm learning it about it, and I've never felt more whole. So
yeah,
you can be better for everyone, better for a community. If, you know, 45 did that, if he self-care and didn't do a little McDonald's, wasn't so angry,
yeah,
maybe he'd be a better person.
Maybe.
And have a different skin tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you know, even Superman and Batman, they wore capes. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any female superheroes that had capes. I think we had crowns and cuffs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman.
She has a cape, doesn't she? I don't know.
I don't know, but
I have,
you know,
my invisible cape on.
Mm-hmm.
But we still need to take the time to take that cape off and launder it and get it ready for the next action. So we've got to take care of ourselves before we can take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So remember that.
Thank
so
you.
We do have just about 8 minutes or so. Sierra, if you'd like to share information.
Plug my refugee support.
Absolutely.
Created a Humboldt County page that's Humboldt Refugee Support that people can get onto. It's a group Facebook page. I'm trying to post articles there that I think are important. There's a big list of organizations to check out if you're interested in the refugee crisis. Personally, I am working through an organization called Human Wire, and they have a Facebook page and they have a real page also. They do direct refugee support. They have a official platform that has people's refugees in all different countries. You can go on and look at their pictures and read their story, and then you can donate to their causes. I have two causes through that. My name is Sierra Leash. You can find my Facebook page. Most of what I post is public at this point because I want the information to be out there. You can always donate directly to my causes. You can write me a message. I would love to. My dream would be to have people in the community choose to sponsor refugee families in other countries, because we don't have the option to resettle refugees here. There's like 9 major agencies that settle refugees in America, and none of them are close to us. The closest ones are in the Bay Area. And to work with refugees, you kind of need to be in a more metropolis area. They have a lot of needs themselves that some of them we couldn't necessarily meet up here. We don't have the governmental agencies that they might have to go to for appointments and stuff. So for me, I've landed on direct refugee support in other countries. And I did it informally through people that I met on Facebook, and now I'm doing it formally through this group called Human Wire, so that people can see what's going on and see the families that I'm working with. The current family that I'm supporting are Kamara and Emily, and they are refugees from the Ivory Coast, and they fled civil war there, and they've ended up in Turkey now after going through a bunch of different countries and living in refugee camps, and then coming to Turkey on the whim of a friend that said they could come there and get a job, and then they got robbed and left at the airport. It's just kind of the way that refugee stories go these days. So I'm trying to raise money to help them get housing. It's really just humans helping humans is kind of where I've landed with my support. And I love to engage the community. I will gladly speak to people about the refugee crisis. I would love to do more fundraisers. In my mind, I'm going to work on organizing a community art and jewelry exchange similar to a clothing swap. Nice. Because I think we all have a lot of art and jewelry in our lives that maybe we could exchange around or get rid of and collect some donations for. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Please find me and contact me. Yeah, I like to be an advocate for my refugee friends because they feel that they are forgotten. And we're a small community, but we're really blessed and we're very diverse. And I know that people want to support the cause. So this is how I've found to get involved.
Do you have a public email address or is your Facebook?
You can find me on Facebook. My email address is my first and last name at gmail.com. No spaces or dots or anything. Sierra Leash at Gmail. You can email me. I will respond.
And leash exactly how it's spelled.
Sierra like the mountains, leash like a dog leash.
You can say that. I didn't want to. Okay. And what about you, Jill?
Right now, Show Up Humble and is working on trying to gather information on the sanctuary cities and what and county and then state. And within that, I hosted the People Power event through the ACLU as a volunteer event that is trying to create freedom cities, which is similar to the sanctuary cities. And so we're meeting, both of these groups are meeting with local officials and getting their input. And a lot of other groups are doing that as well, as where they stand on it, how they handle ICE. And we are trying to get that in writing and so we can declare it to be a sanctuary place, a city, and then it could be county and then state. And then, you know, that's what we're working on. The next meeting for Show Up Humboldt is on Tuesday, 7 p.m. at the Beachcomber Cafe in Bayside, California. Nice. And the cafe is closed, but it'll be open for the meeting. And there's other things. You can email me at showuphumboldt@gmail.com, or you can go to the Facebook page at Show Up Humboldt.
And I myself am an activist a bit.
Yes.
I am active in our local chapter of the NAACP. Yes, there is a local chapter of the NAACP. It's been around for 50 years. It has grown from a year ago having maybe 8 members come to the meetings to last February over 60.
Right on.
Yes. And I can attest that it's definitely as a result of this political climate we're in. So the NAACP meets the third Sunday of every month at the Eureka Labor Temple. And it's this coming Sunday, March 19th at 3:30. Sunday, March 19th, 3:30, Eureka Labor Temple. And we have a Facebook page, EurekaNAACP.org, and a Eureka NAACP Facebook page as well. In closing, I want to leave you with a quote that was from a speech that I read on behalf of the NAACP president, Liz Smith. Her psychic friend told her, and I won't use the name, but I will say 45. 45 will be a divine blessing. A divine blessing to bring unity among groups of people who have not always played together or played well together.
Pretty much.
And with that, this is your charge. This is your time to become an activist yourself. There's no age limit. There's no gender requirement. If your heart, if your spirit, if your intuition, if it moves you, listen to it and act.
There's no skill level.
Absolutely. I would like to thank you, Jill, and thank you, Sierra, for being a part of this conversation this evening. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for being an inspiration to not only myself, but others around us in our community. I'd like to also thank our Thursday Night Talk producer, Geraldine Goldberg, and our Thursday Night Talk engineer, Michael Roccaforte. I'm going to leave you with a song in honor of this conversation and in honor of Women's History Month. It's Diane Reeves, "I Am an Endangered Species." Have a good evening.
I am an endangered species, but I sing no victim song.
Well,
I am a woman. I am an artist. And I know where my voice belongs.
I'm a woman, I am an artist, I know where my voice belongs. I am an endangered species, but I sing no victim songs. I am a woman, I am an artist, I know where my voice belongs. I am a woman, I exist, I shake my fist but not my hips. My skin is dark, my body is strong, I sing of rebirth.
Listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thank you to our host, Lorna Bryant, and our guests, Sierra Leash. Excuse me there. Sierra Leash, as well as Jill Larrabee. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email ThursdayNightTalk@KHSU.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk, Linda Stansberry will be our host. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares is coming up next. It's 8 o'clock.
Donations from KHSU supporters from all over our listening area make these programs possible. If you're listening right now in Crescent City or Redway, in Willow Creek or Eureka, or anywhere in between, and haven't renewed or have never given, please join us today and keep this community resource strong. Give online at khsu.org now. Thanks.
Public service of Humboldt State University. This is KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. Donors include Six Rivers Optical, offering a large selection of eyewear, sunglasses, and contact lenses. Also, same-day service is available for prescriptions in stock. Six Rivers Optical, celebrating over 34 years of keeping life in focus, open Monday through Saturday on Harrison Avenue, next to Lima's Pharmacy in Eureka. Learn more at sixriversoptical.com.